Welcome to Social Workers Break Room. This is Imelda.
And I'm Jennifer.
And today we bring you contracts and consulting. How do I start?
How do I start, Imelda? Because I want to be a hashtag girl boss or a digital nomad. But really, somebody should sponsor me already.
I'm great. I'll sell anything.
Just don't get into MLM.
I'll sell some stuff.
Hey, stay with us.
Should I sell surfboards?
Hey,
I feel like we could get a coldest water bottle sponsorship. Seems like God and everybody has that on TikTok.
Yeah. Oh, the cold water.
The coldest water bottle.
Coldest water bottle.
And people be putting it in videos that are like, yeah, they're like, my grandma died, but also my water is crispy and cold. And we're like, Jesus Christ, Jeff.
I'm homeless, but I'm so glad I have
the coldest water.
It keeps me hydrated.
God.
Yeah.
Tone deaf. Absolutely tone deaf. We would never do anything like that.
No.
Unless the price was right. What?
What? What she said.
I didn't say anything. Okay. Me.
You know?
You're so cute. Can barely handle it. Okay. So one of the things Imelda and I genuinely get asked all the time, like literally yesterday on Instagram and all the time in real life, is how did you get to be a consultant, or how do you get contract works? How did you get all those contracts? So hopefully today Imelda and I will break down a little further for you. But to start with, Imelda, tell me a little bit about the kind of work you've done in this arena.
Well, I have had my fair share of contract, good consulting jobs or projects. I think it's more based out of on projects than on a specific position. So I have done program evaluation, where I evaluated a whole scholarship program and looking at the return investment of that scholarship for first generation students in the community. So that was a fun one. I have also done grant applications as well. Just, you know, a one-time thing where this nonprofit, is very small nonprofit, wanted to apply for a grant and they didn't know anyone who could put everything that they do into writing and present it in a compelling way to submit the application. So I've done some grant writing. I have done PRN. That's where when we started working together, I was a PRN for a psychiatric hospital, where I would just get called. I think it was the beginning of the month. I will, you know, put my schedule and then I will be on staff as needed to cover for other social workers or just to complete work on the weekends. So I feel like my experience has been diverse on the type of consulting and PRN jobs that I've had. But I feel like the more you do it and the more people you know, that's a skill or that's an ability that you have to do side projects like that, the more come your way. Because word of mouth and, you know, the field is not that large.
Right.
So it's a great place to start. And hopefully we can share with you some of the things that we have done that it can open up your brainstorming ideas on where you can start and the opportunities that you can look for.
Absolutely. So, you know, it's no question that Imelda and I work hard, but we also want to lend a warning about boundaries and the danger of hustle culture. Mm-hmm. So you're allowed to say no. We do all the time. And you're not a failure if you don't have three jobs, if you don't have an LLC. You're allowed to work what you need to or what you want to grow your career or your finances. You don't have to do all this. You're not a bad social worker if you don't. And you're not a great social worker just because you do. Mm-hmm. So one of the first places to kind of start, and as Imelda mentioned, I think is one of the best on your journey, is with PRN or contract work. So PRN is fancy Latin for as needed, but can be a great thing to search if you're looking to pick up some very part-time work. So most healthcare organizations have a PRN workforce to cover either regionally small areas, you know, for example, a rural area, a particular clinic, or to cover weekends and holidays. So that can be an excellent place to start. especially since you don't get paid benefits in these positions. They can also often offer you a higher wage. Some of the places I would start to look, again, because it's very common in the medical field, would be medical hospitals, psychiatric hospitals, home health agencies, and hospices. Another thing that's often available is contract clinical work. So I'm most familiar about this through the lens of private practice, but I know Imelda has experience in the more contract one that she'll share about as well. But many private practices will contract you to take clients. So these should have pretty good wages, especially if you're going to be a 1099 versus a W-2 employee, which I'll discuss in a moment. But many insurance companies pay out a little over $100 an hour. So I wouldn't go any lower than about $40 a client as a 1099 and about $25 an hour as a W-2 for sure. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of emotional labor that goes into therapy. So it's something to think about when you're choosing some of this work. So let's talk about being a 1099. So a 1099 is a tax form that means you're an independent contractor. It has some benefits, like you can really control a lot of the things like your hours, but it also means that you pay your own taxes. So if you're a 1099 and you're expected to make over a certain amount of money in your primary job, you usually have to make estimated quarterly tax payments. So this means that four times a year, you make a payment out of your bank account to the IRS. And if not, you could be fined and charged interest for being late. So there's lots of forms and calculators you can use on the IRS website to figure out if and how much these payments might be. But I always recommend, you know, assuming you're going to lose about 25% of your 1099 wage for taxes. And it's something to consider, again, not only what you ask for, but also, you know, is this the right position for you to take? Another things to consider when you're a 1099 employee at a clinical practice is your own malpractice insurance. You know, where I was contracted, we had to carry our own policy, and it was about $300 a year. Then we also only got paid by the session, so we got paid nothing for no-shows. Wow. So anytime that we spend like researching interventions, doing documentation, rescheduling patients, building the treatment plan, talking to parents, talking to loved ones, talking to their primary care provider, their psychiatrist, didn't count for anything. So with that practice, by the time I broke it down, between not being paid for driving up to the clinic, not being able, you know, to pay for gas, the documentation time, treatment planning time, and paying for my own malpractice and taxes, it worked out to something ridiculous, like $15 an hour. And I decided that, honestly, I would rather keep working retail than go through all of that emotional labor and all of that liability to only make $15 an hour. So there are definitely and totally some ethical private practices. Just be careful and really think it through before signing a contract.
Now that we're talking about 1099, something to keep in mind as well is that when you have a 1099, you are telling the IRS that you're working for yourself. Mm-hmm. So a lot of your expenses, your everyday expenses, can be deductible. So it's important to have a CPA or someone who does your taxes, who understands what it takes and all the different ways that you can put your everyday expenses into your tax return. It's, for example, you know, Jennifer was talking about driving and gas money and food and so many other things that, you know, come out of your pocket because your employer doesn't pay you for that, or they don't cover any mileage or any other use of technology. Like if you have to get your own computer, you have to get your own technology to provide these services. All those things, you can write them off on your tax return because those are items that you utilize for your company or for your work. So it's important to have someone who helps you do your taxes, who is able to catch those things if you choose to work as a 1099 full-time.
Absolutely. And like Imelda said, please make sure it's a tax professional. We're not saying you go out and buy a MacBook and you can write off 100% of your MacBook. There's things like depreciation schedules. There's things, you know, if you use it 60% personal and 40% work, then you can only write off a certain percentage of it. Yep. So the blanket advice is if you're going to be a 1099, have somebody do your taxes. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes before you even sign that contract, have your tax person look at it so they can help you decide if it's a good financial decision. So sometimes that work can go off the rails. But Imelda, you've worked in a different sort of contract that's been great for you. Tell me more about that.
Yeah. So I currently work with a private practice It is owned by an LCSW, and so she has her private practice, and she has a contract with the state where she gets court order family reunification cases. So these are cases where there's custody issues, custody battle between the parents for X, Y, and Z reasons, and the court is ordering in order to have the family or the children reunited with one of the parents, they have to do a certain hours of supervised family time. And most of these cases, the court has ordered the clinician or the private practice that these supervisions have to be done by a master's level professional because the interactions between the parents and the children are, you know, complicated dynamics that need to have some coaching and redirection from a, you know, master's level professional. So I am listed as a PRN supervisor with our private practice, and they call me whenever they have an assignment for me. Most of my cases are Spanish-speaking families, and once they assign a family to me, I contact the family, I do intros, and I start participating in the supervisions either weekly or biweekly or monthly, however the schedule is set up. And then I, after the visits, I send my notes and reports to the primary clinician, who is the LCSW, and she uses those notes to provide that report to the court, the family court, whenever they have a hearing. And so sometimes my assignments could be 6 weeks, some others are 12 weeks, however long the court determines that the parents should have supervised visits. And even though some of those interactions can be a little challenging, it is rewarding when the family is making progress and the court decides that supervised visits are no longer needed and the family or the kids can start seeing mom and dad or, you know, their caregiver freely without the involvement of the court. So, and I feel like, especially for me, because of the cultural differences that some of these families might experience, this might be their first time dealing with the court or with any type of, you know, legal involvement, they are overwhelmed. Both parents are overwhelmed. They don't understand what's happening, why the court is ordering all these extra services and extra steps in order for them to see their children. So being able to provide culturally grounded services and understanding of their current situation makes a big difference. So this is a contract work that I really enjoy doing because it keeps me, even though I work more in the macro setting right now, doing this type of work with the families keeps me connected with my clinical roots. So I enjoy doing this. Yeah,
absolutely. And that's another thing to take into account, you know, not only the wage, but is it important to you and does it advance your career and does it help you keep, you know, kind of a foot in both realms or whatever's most important to you in kind of the grand scheme of social work?
Yes.
So another great area, kind of thinking of micro ones, can be clinical consulting. A lot of times you need a very particular skill for this. So for example, I'm a credentialed gerontologist. I'm also a certified perinatal mental health professional. So oftentimes I'll be asked to help with program builds, job interviews. You know, does this person truly have the right skills? What would we hope to see in a chart audit if a person is truly competent in this area? And some kind of curriculum and training design. These contracts can often be harder to come by, but if you have a clear website and network, I mean, really anything is possible. So the other part that we wanted to talk about today beyond micro is all the macro opportunities for contracting, consulting, and PRN work, which I think is where Imelda and I both have a ton of experience. So we'll kind of transition now into telling you all of those opportunities.
Yes. Grant writing. So do you want to be a profitable professional as a, or consulting as a social worker? You should learn how to write grants. This is one of the highest skilled or highly valued skills that a lot of people are looking for. Especially startups and grassroots organizations and nonprofits, they're always looking for funding opportunities, as you might know. But more often than not, these applications are lengthy, time-consuming, and very specific. So they usually require one person who is just solely focused on these applications, especially if they require a lot of documentation, pulling information from different programs and putting it together and presenting it in a way that it's compelling. So as a grant writer, you learn and absorb the mission and the purpose of the organization, and then you present it to the funders or the funding organizations, and you tell them, you know, why should they fund these programs and where the money is going to. And writing compelling stories of impact and success. But you also highlight the great need for the organization to continue having this type of funding to either grow programs or continue providing that, the great mission to the community. So if you want to get into the area of consulting, I suggest taking a grant writing course or a certificate. I feel like some community colleges provide mm-hmm. some grant writing opportunities or courses. Some MSW programs as well, if you choose the macro or the PAC track, most MSW programs offer a grant writing class, which I think it's an elective. Mm-hmm. Not all programs have it as a core class. So, but if your program offers it, I highly suggest you take it, because this would just add another tool to your toolbox. And we have talked before about how people make money on grant writing. Mm-hmm. So I think the most typical way that grant writers charge is that they charge a percentage of the grant. So they say, hey, I won't charge for my services unless we get the money. So sometimes they can start with as little as 3%, or some people, I think the average is like 10%. So as you're negotiating with an agency or an organization on grant writing, always have an idea of what percentage you are asking for. Or some of them, they do have a flat rate and say, we're going to pay you $2,000 a month if you write at least one application per month for us, or two applications per month or something like that. So sometimes they have a specific budget allocated for grant writers. And so you tie it like, okay, so if you can only pay me this much per month, this is how many applications I'm going to submit. It could be two, it could be three, depending on how long it takes for the grant writer. But a great way to start doing this is either if you are in an agency where there's a grant writer already, ask to shadow them, mm-hmm. ask to just have coffee or have a meeting with them just to learn more about what they do and how they got to where they're at. I feel like most grant writers, they start more as a like freelancing, and then they continue developing their skills and learning more about the different foundations locally who, you know, provide funding. Also different like sports teams, they also offer grant opportunities for nonprofits. So just try to get more involved in what the grant writing field looks like in your city or in your state. And if you can take a class, that will be great to adding to your into your resume. The other area of consulting that you can do as a macro social worker is program evaluation. So this is one of the areas where your social work clinical skills can be transferable from macro to consulting from micro to macro or consulting. Program evaluation follows as a similar guideline as that you will use for a new patient assessment. So you start with the background information, how the program started, where was the need in the community, why the program started, and then you go into the current and the presenting issues, where the program is at, what is going well, what is not going so well, what are the areas of growth and development, and then what are the tools that they need to meet those goals. So, and then, you know, you look at the future, what are the needs of the program? Where is it going to? Does it need funding or staffing or, you know, whatever it is. But mastering program evaluation takes time. So the more you do it, the easier it gets. Shadowing people, it's a great way to get more experience on this. I remember my first gig as an evaluator. I was asked to evaluate a scholarship program that helped first generation students in South Phoenix about 10 years ago. So this is a program that was not current. It was a scholarship that they provided, this foundation provided to students in South Phoenix about 10 years ago. And now they wanted to see the impact of those scholarships. So my job as a program evaluator, I contacted all of the scholarship recipients, tried, some of them were still in the city, in the state, some of them were out of state. And I did a survey, an assessment on all of them, of their journey, how many graduated, where they're working now, if they opened their own businesses, the full thing. And then I presented the full analysis of the program to the funding source of this is how many people graduated. This is how much, you know, how much money we think that it's going back into the community. How many people were able to purchase their homes? So you were able to give like the full spectrum of where, how it started, where is that? And, you know, if they want to fund the program again, this is how effective it was 10 years ago. So for this project, I charge by the hour. So at the end of the month, I will send an invoice to the person who hired me and with the amount of hours that I spent working on the project each week. So the hours change from week to week, depending on, you know, if I had interviews with scholarship recipients or if it was just more doing data analysis and research. And then I also took into account the gas that I spent doing visits, my use of internet and my personal computer and phone, and any other related expenses. So we came to an agreement that I was going to charge a certain amount of money per hour. And then they will give me like, you know, $100 stipend every week or every 2 weeks for those related expenses. So they knew kind of like, you know, how to keep that balance between my hourly wage and my expenses that they will cover. So that's, you know, just one example of how you can negotiate your consulting gig as a either grant writer or as a program evaluator or someone, you know, who's just providing a service in general, providing your knowledge or skills. Jennifer, you have some other examples of things that you have done as well?
Yeah. You know, a lot of my contracting work ends up being around curriculum and training. So a lot of agencies, whether they be social work related or not, are looking for further education on topics that sometimes you have a lot of knowledge or experience in. For a lot of these, it looks like some education on, you know, justice, equity, diversity, and inclusion work, or what we like to call JEDI work, because it sounds way cooler, or community organizing. So companies or agencies will often reach out or will connect to you through networking, and you want to determine what their goals are. You know, as Mel said, same process for program evaluation, for looking at clients and how they want to grow. You want to understand what they're hoping to achieve. So is it more of a needs assessment? Is it about creating a shared vocabulary? Do they want to do a specific disability justice initiative, et cetera? And then you design a program that provides education in those areas. So sometimes you're just creating the program and then giving it to them to execute. And sometimes you'll also be leading the sessions with things like breakout groups or workshops or doing meeting facilitation. So it's important to decide and kind of design that up front and think about it for your rate and your budget. You know, if you're going to do a lot more hours with an agency, you might decide to charge a lower rate. If you're going to do very few hours with like highly technical or highly expertised work, then you might choose a higher rate. So another area that I get a lot of contracts in is community organizing. You know, doing that initial base building is really hard and requires a lot of trust and skill in how to empower community members. And you always want to make sure you're empowering them in a way that's going to be longitudinal. So even after you step out, the grant ends, whatever it looks like, you go through the budget, you want to be able to, again, definitely step away and make sure that you've given those community members the skills they need to lead, to facilitate, to manage conflict, you know, everything that they can do to hopefully run their own community and empower the folks in their neighborhoods or who care about their issues. Finally, a similar area that I've done contract work in is research. So this has looked, you know, pretty well across the spectrum of research. So I've actually managed a study or, you know, been listed as a principal investigator. I've done data cleaning in SPSS, which I'm sure all gives us nightmares of either your undergrad or grad school. But if you can muster up and remember how to use it, that's not a skill that a ton of people have. And even just doing data cleaning in SPSS is a great contract work. Or I've also done, you know, training and supervising staff to actually execute the research, do the surveys, talk to folks, you know, run the sites. So if this is a skill you have, you may need to volunteer first. But once you've kind of built a name and again around that skill, market it. It really oftentimes is a rare social science skill.
Definitely is, yes. And remember, there's no right or wrong way to get into consulting. The most important thing is to being open to opportunities and putting yourself out there with your skill set. Your knowledge and experience are valuable and you should sell them and charge as such. As always, we hope this is helpful and we have some resources linked on our website and the website page for this episode. Best of luck and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Get that contract.
Get the money.
Do that thing.
Show your skills.